All right, I am here with the Oracle of London, Alexander Mercuris, and I am also here with the great Robert Barnes. Mr. Barnes, locals, where can people find you?
At vivabarneslaw.locals.com. That's where we can discuss everything that some of the folks on YouTube and elsewhere don't want us to discuss publicly. All the uncensored conversations take place there.
Absolutely. And that's what we're going to do for this video. We'll talk about maybe 5-10 minutes about the Pandora Papers. Ooh, the Pandora Papers. Very, very mischievous, very revealing, those Pandora Papers that have come out. Those evil elites, Putin and King Abdullah. And then we will do a second segment where we will talk about what's going on in the U.S. with the mandates, with the elites in the U.S., Robert, and what they're doing to stomp on people's rights. So let's get rolling. Robert, what are your thoughts on Pandora's Papers? And then Alexander, jump into it as well. I know you've done a video on your channel, Alexander, about this. You probably have a lot to say. Let's get rolling.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's probably impractical, but I do advise people never in writing, always in cash for a reason. And that the reason's like this. And in particular, these tendency, you would think after the Panama Papers, people would learn not to have a centralized source, a same source of providing legal or financial or tax or other advice concerning their operations around the world, because it's very susceptible to hacking. It's very susceptible to government intrusion. And you know, there's still suspicions about some of the sourcing of even the Panama Papers, why it went in a certain direction, somehow didn't unearth certain people, but did unearth others. That it may have had a political motivation or even political planning behind it. So, it's the reason why they were able to figure out Romney's entire asset structure, because he used the same Cayman entities that everybody else used. You're much better off if you don't use anybody that's on the radar screen. And when you do, your risk of your papers or your documents or your information getting leaked or disclosed or discussed is unduly substantial, particularly if you're a political target. Because I do find it odd that, you know, somehow the Bush family, for example, their financial information doesn't get leaked, right? But other people do, and that those people tend to show up on the opposition list of certain institutional interests. And that may have a little more to do with what the real source of this leak is than the official narrative.
I think that's absolutely right. I think this is, straightforwardly, I think this is a very politically motivated leak. I think you only have to look at the media groups that are involved in it. They're all part of the, straightforwardly, the left of centre media world. The Guardian is the one that's running it here in Britain, relentlessly. I have to say, I mean, I read some of these things. I haven't actually gone into the actual detail of it, but it didn't seem to me as if there was very much that was actually particularly interesting or very new. A vast amount of, spade work, lots of things uncovered, lots of things deeply embarrassing for certain people, no doubt, troubling for some of them, but nothing that I thought was exceptionally earth-shattering. People, you know, rich people, own shell companies. They have offshore, tax arrangements. They do all these kind of things. I mean, what's new about that exactly? I'm really not quite sure. It does seem as if Europeans do it rather more than Americans do. That may be more a reflection of the fact that, you know, you do take tax more seriously perhaps than we do. Perhaps it might reflect the fact that we are very much a world of old money still. And old money has always taken the philosophy that, you know, is really above petty things like paying taxes. I mean, that's what republics and democracies do, not aristocracies as we have in Europe. But anyway, that's just my own personal view. But I mean, I thought overall, it really didn't actually hit any particular punch as far as I was concerned. And my own personal view is that the person it's really focused on is actually Putin. Certainly the media in Britain has overwhelmingly focused on Putin, except yet again, they've come up with nothing that you can really put your finger on and say this actually fingers the man. So either he's followed your advice, Robert, and he's very careful to keep everything, in a very sort of careful way, or alternatively, perhaps they're looking for something that doesn't exist. And I rather suspect, to some extent, it's the second. I mean, I don't want to be sound naive or unworldly. I'm pretty sure he's very well provided for. I'm sure he's done all the necessary things to make sure that if he does ever retire, he's not, you know, going to be well looked after. But, you know, I'm becoming entirely sceptical of this, you know, $200 billion fortune that people say that he has. Anyway, that was my thoughts about this.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted, before you answer that, Robert, I also wanted to ask you a question about King Abdullah. One of the interesting things was that they found money, a lot of money, about $100 million in, was it North Dakota or South Dakota from King Abdullah? Why would that be?
That's fascinating. I mean, what's interesting is for like Europe, the reason why they use so much more of the offshore world is partially because it's very much British dominated. It's either in the UK, the banking system sort of recreated itself after the British Empire collapsed into its own form of empire as the place to keep your assets and your money, and the Caribbean is basically an extension of the British. And unlike the U.S., where you're taxed on your worldwide income in the U.S., so you don't get any special benefit by putting something offshore unless it's simply hidden from the government. In Europe, you do benefit from things not being within your jurisdiction, so it creates this economic model that incentivizes Europe old money putting their cash outside of their own domestic jurisdiction. If I'm Vladimir Putin, what's the odds I'm going to use any British or British connected or Western connected entities? Even if I have $200 billion, I'm probably not using them as the means to store and protect and know about my wealth, given his notorious skepticism, justifiable, of the Western intelligence services that are heavily, heavily infiltrated in the offshore financial world. I've dealt with that on multiple occasions. There are people that had crazy beliefs about me, but that's a whole other story. But from dealing with that world and exposing it in different parts. But Russians also are generally distrustful, even though the Cyprus experiment didn't turn out so well. Even though a lot of Russian billionaires have put a lot of money in the UK, they don't trust the UK. So they usually have a backup plan. But I can't imagine Putin doing it. But I agree. The other great tax shelter for the world is, of course, the United States for all of Europe. I mean, there's a reason why there's a bunch of companies domiciled in Delaware, little tiny Delaware. It isn't because Joe Biden is from there. It's because it's one of the best places to protect and hide your wealth in the world, which is always ironic when the U.S. goes around complaining about other people's tax issues when we are one of the world's great tax shelters. And arguably wanted to be, you know, with our relationship with Panama and Noriega, suckered a bunch of criminals into putting all of their assets in Panama, and then we went down and seized it whenever we wanted to. It was kind of a pirate safe harbor, but it was on a leash that people didn't realize it. And there's still aspects of that. North Dakota and South Dakota and Wyoming and Alaska and Nevada, all states that have very generous asset protection laws, asset protection trust, anonymous entities. You can get away with a lot of stuff in the United States that you cannot get away with in Europe, in terms of anonymity, in terms of movement of assets, in terms of legal protection. Alaskan trust, you can do a fraudulent deal and you can't set it aside unless you catch it within 6 months. You know, the Cook Islands, notorious for their private anonymous trust. So a lot of people don't recognize that because it's mostly foreigners taking advantage of that. The U.S. authorities don't let Americans take advantage of that very often, but for foreigners, it's often great. So it doesn't surprise me that there'd be a lot of assets tied up and connected to everything related to that. Uranium One was a U.S.-based project in part, that whole Hillary Clinton-related scandal of what was going on there. And you would normally naturally use, there's a reason why credit card companies are all in the Dakotas, because of special immunities they have lined up there. It's not like the banks moved to the Dakotas. You know, they set it up because those states, in order to create tax revenue, created very generous and favorable local legislation, along with Wyoming and Nevada historically, in order to mirror and mimic what's in Delaware, along with Alaska and the Cook Islands, basically to help protect and hide assets from the rest of the world.
I had absolutely no idea about this. And how much do the U.S. authorities know about what's going on? I mean, do they have the real granular information? I mean, you know, if let's say I'm a European businessman and I wanted to do something and I set up somewhere in the United States, will the US authorities know all about what I'm doing? Will they know about me specifically, or do they just have a general idea about what's going on?
There's been an internal debate for a while, and that with Peter Thiel's Palantir system that's coming online for the IRS, they're starting to expand it. But for the longest time, and still mostly true, the IRS is limited to a database in Martindale, West Virginia, originally because Robert Byrd was from West Virginia, but like a computer system that's like 50 years old. And the reason is deliberate. Congress doesn't want the IRS to have access to that information because they don't want them stumbling into places they don't want them stumbling into. So actually, the interesting, that's where U.S. tax authorities will know far more about U.S. citizens than they will about foreigners. They don't actually have the information to track or trace foreign investment in the United States in a meaningful manner. There are places and people that do, but that's in the intelligence apparatus and at the Fed. So that's the only people they want to have that information. So, intelligence services, they want to know. They'll know. And if the Fed wants to know, they'll know. But nobody else will. Your ordinary tax authority will have no idea. And your ordinary local asset protection kind of, or someone trying to pierce asset protection will not either. And you have to use very special skills. And U.S. banks are not bad. I mean, years ago, and I part of my business was to track people who are defrauded around the world. And fascinating. You find out from investigators, all the banks that are Russia, not so safe. Small amount of money, you can find out anybody's bank information. Monaco is the safest. Dubai, not so safe. Because information is only as safe as the teller is free from a bribe, right? That's the real way to think of it. If you got a low-level employee that will take a few grand and get information, then that information is not safe. In the United States, certain bank information, et cetera, you can get access to, but really shielded information is very tough because they don't even allow our own tax authorities to really have access to that intel.
That's so interesting. I find it most interesting that you use the word track and trace, by the way, because, of course, this has become a word, a phrase that has particular meanings now. I mean, is this entirely a coincidence that we're hearing so much of this word now, that you want to track and trace financial information, you also want to track and trace people's medical histories, their records, what they're doing? Is this all just chance that we have all of this going on?
Not at all, because I filed suit during the Obama administration, because the first it's not a coincidence that the information gathering source under the Obama administration for the Affordable Care Act about everybody's medical records. And the pitch was, we need to digitize these records because it'll make things so much more effective and efficient and productive and reduce cost. People didn't do the math. It also meant that, poor Nixon just didn't come up with the right idea. He wouldn't have had to send in the plumbers because all the medical records would have been available with a keystroke at an IRS agent's desk. And that's the agency they chose to enforce the medical records requirement, was the IRS. So the IRS was going around gathering up tens of millions of medical records under the guise of making sure that they're digitized and all the rest. And in fact, it was, a J. Edgar Hoover wet dream of information. So they did it with my client. They see 60 million medical records because he was sort of the medical record digital keeping business of 10 million Americans, including every judge in the state of California, the Major League Baseball, the Screen Actors Guild, the movie directors, the producers. And I mean, you don't need a lot of info to know what's on those records. You can say, oh, this director gets treatment for that. And oh, that judge's kid is going to that rehab facility, so on and so forth. And so it was incredible. I ended up filing suit. We ended up being two congressional hearings, got triggered, et cetera. They ended up agreeing to destroy the records and got caught with their pants down, et cetera. My client decided he liked Europe better than the United States after that. He's still there. But that gives some scale. They were thinking of it then. And so it's always been in the hopper. And now it's not a coincidence. They're combining, let's do every transaction over $600 with any payment processor, particularly targeting crypto and other places where right now information is outside of their control and their informational control. And at the same time, wanting vaccine passports that ultimately are going to be about, in order to make sure these things are secure, in order to make sure they're safe, there's really only one way to do it, and that will be some form of physical some chip or something like it, quantum tattoo, whatever it is, because that will be, they'll say, hey, this is the only, yeah, exactly. Right now it's on your phone. Soon it's, you know, the, if and all you gotta do is track the kind of things Bill Gates likes to invest in, and you can get a sense of what the future looks like. He's invested in patents that, you know, you can have basically a little chip in you that will be your financial information and your medical information. And I mean, they tested it out on India for identification purposes, biometric identification purposes, for years. And Gates was deeply invested in that. And their argument is this will be, we need to be able to track everybody everywhere all the time. We need to be able to have something that's connected to their body in order to be able to make sure that only the right people, so to speak, get certain services and certain information. And supposedly it's done for their benefit. This is the best way to have that full financial access. It's done in the name of democratizing financial access, which I find fascinating. Talking about Orwellian language. But I think that's the future, and they're getting there step by step by step. And the latest financial track and trace is just an extension and continuation of the vaccine passport, medical identity record disclosal. That's all part together.